Welcome to a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintrom. How are you doing, Seth?
Good. I just got up a red eye.
Yeah, we're both pretty tired right now. I woke up very early here in Paris to be able to cover the pickup truck event, the Tesla Cybertruck event, and Seth just got off a red eye. So we are both going to be a bit low energy for this podcast, but we're going to try our best to keep it entertaining, because stay tuned. There's plenty of information to discuss, even though we did, if you missed it, go check it out. But we did a podcast right after the unveiling to just unload our thoughts, including Seth's test ride of the Cybertruck and his impression from the event itself. Since then, there's been a few more information coming out of the event, including the fact that what I think one of the most interesting facts, there's going to be a Tesla solar roof option for the Cybertruck. Solar roof, it's going to be the, I don't know how they called it yet, but it's sort of the retractable cover for the bed of the truck, or they call it the cyber vault of the Cybertruck. And right now there's a retractable roof, which is much like those automatic blinders that you have in rich people's houses, where they just come down. It's like a similar thing, but for the back of your truck, which has two functions. It's good for aerodynamic performance, of course, since the wind doesn't go inside the bed of the truck, and it's also serve as, that's why they call it the vault, I assume, where you can actually keep any type of goods in the bed locked, which is not always the case for a pickup. But it also looks like a big unused part of the roof, really. Like, unlike the top part over the cabin of the pickup truck, where you have a glass roof, which we have all been very much used to from Tesla, with the Model 3 having glass roof, Model S and X having glass option for a long time. Well, I guess there's no option for the Model X. It's just it's standard. So the same thing for the Cybertruck. But then there's just this metal, I assume it's metal, retractable roof on it for the bed. Elon on Twitter confirmed today that there's going to be a solar option for that. So I assume that he means that solar cells are going to be embedded into the retractable system. And he estimates that that alone could result in 15 miles of range added per day, which is kind of impressive, because we're talking about what, a 6.5 feet by 4 feet area that is covered with solar cell.
Yeah, I mean, it's on a diagonal, so it's like the hypotenuse of that a little bit.
Yeah.
But, so it's about two normal solar panels, so you would imagine it's around 600, 700 watts of power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's...
At an angle, and not always perfectly...
Yeah, I guess you want to park your car or your Cybertruck in a way that would be conducive to that. I think, you know, I don't know if you're going to get your commute on it, but it's kind of nice to not have to worry about the vampire drain, especially if your car's like parked at an airport or something. Maybe you get your Sentry or your Tesla Cam stuff covered, and you know, that alone, it's pretty cool. And you know, your car's not doing anything anyway, so might as well be absorbing some electricity. And you know, obviously Tesla makes panels, so it's all integrated. I do wonder what, I mean, 15 miles for a truck is actually quite a lot of power. I think that might be optimistic.
Well, it does point to potentially the efficiency of the truck that we've been wondering about. Like, we've been trying to determine the actual energy capacity of the three battery pack option that are going to be available on the truck. And it's been hard to determine, because like there's a big question mark over just actually how aerodynamic is the design, because it's so rough. And then just like, then you look at the wheels too, and you're like, the wheels and those tires, like, just
those are not efficient tires.
Those aren't, at least from what we can see, it's hard to imagine that they are very efficient. So it's very hard to determine like what's the needed energy to move that truck a mile. And then Elon comes out and say, oh, just this solar system was going to be able to have 15 miles of range a day, which is very appealing. I mean, that's something that people have been asking about for a long time. Like, they'd always like, oh, why don't you make solar panels on your cars, including like, we've seen it first. I think was the Fisker, and it was just, they were just powering the fans on the AC, basically on the, climate control system of the vehicle. And, then they, Prius did the same.
Yeah. Prius plug-in had that. I think it was just the regular Prius. And again, it was just the fans for the air conditioning.
But then they brought it back on the Prius Prime, and that was feeding the battery pack, the last one.
Right.
Back in 2017, though it was either never made available in the US, or if it was made available in the US, it's only recently been an option or something, because there was some issues with the regulation for the roof structure with when you had the glass solar panels. Solar cells, I should say. So it's been an option available on the market, but it has never been really popularized and made like an actual useful thing. Of course, there's been a bunch of EV startups like marketing themselves as solar cars because they claim that most of the power is going to be coming from solar cells embedded into the vehicles, talking about like Sono motors or light years.
Exactly.
Those have been concept vehicles, and they have a decent concept, but their claims haven't been verified. Like they're talking about like 30 plus miles of range added on the vehicle every day. But those are much more efficient vehicles, very smaller vehicles, more aerodynamic vehicles than the Tesla Cybertruck, which is a monster. So,
right. But back to your battery question, I think it's going to be 100 for the base model, and which is 250 miles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. And then double that for 500 miles, 200 kilowatt hours. It just seems like that's like a good, you know, a very optimistic, like getting that truck to go 250 miles on the same pack that the Model S 100D goes, what, 340? That seems reasonable.
Yeah. It's hard to tell. I like the Rivian comparison. Rivian's base model is 105 kilowatt hour battery pack, and they claim 230 miles of range. So Tesla claims a higher range, 250 miles. But so the common sense will tell you, okay, they have a bigger than 105 kilowatt battery pack. But I like to think that based on Tesla's history, they are more efficient than the Rivian truck, which is hard to believe exactly when you look at the truck, especially at the tires and everything. But they have a covered bed. So I actually like to think that their aerodynamic performance is significantly better on the Tesla Cybertruck than the Rivian R1T. So I'd like to think that 100 kilowatt hour, yes, makes sense for the base version. So if that's 250 miles, that's 2.5 miles per kilowatt hour. So that means 6 kilowatt hour production from the solar panels per day on average for the base version. So
yeah.
That's doable, I feel like. Because it's six
kilowatt hours?
Mm-hmm.
So that would mean, so if it was a 600 watt panel or panels, that would be 10 hours of direct sun. That's a little bit optimistic.
There's going to be more efficient solar cells on this.
Yeah, like, so maybe it goes up to 700 or 800.
Especially we're talking about 2021, probably. Maybe right. The option's not going to be available at first, and it's going to be like 2022 or something like that. So, yeah, I think that's doable. And Elon also talked about possible other option that he called solar wings that would deploy out of the vehicle, which I assume would be for like a stationary position. If you park the car, you could deploy those solar wings and have a wider surface to collect sunlight. And he said that that could have 30 to 40 miles of range per day, which then would put it past the threshold of the average commute in the US, which now opens up the claim that you could say that the car is self-powered if for most people they will drive less than the car produces energy, which is a very appealing concept that your car power itself completely with the sun too, so with renewable energy. So I get why he's doing it. But this whole deployable thing, I think it's purely the fact whether it's useful or not, it's purely based on how does it what is the deployment mechanism and how does it go back to storage? It has to be easy to do. It has to be very convenient. And does it have to take too much space too? If it takes like three parking spaces, then not as useful. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you 100% in that it's a very compelling idea to run on the sun, like directly on the sun. The idea that you can just go out into the middle of the desert and kind of live on that electricity that the panels are generating. If you even have a deployable one, and you know, frankly, like deployable solar, you could just load up a bunch of solar panels in the bed of the truck and deploy those. I mean, deployable could be anything, but yeah. The fact that you have the we're guessing 600 to 800 watt panels means that, you know, you could not only power the vehicle, but if you're camping, you could power a bunch of other stuff. It's kind of a cool package. And that idea that you're doing that is what's most compelling, even if in reality, you're probably not going to get too many miles off the sun.
Yeah. And that's a good segue to the camper mode for the Tesla Cybertruck. Elon didn't talk about it during the presentation, but Tesla did release an image on the website, which we posted just a few hours ago on Electrek, with this old camper configuration with a tent coming out of the bed and some kind of kitchen appliances accessory that you can basically slide off the bed in the back. So Elon confirmed that that's going to be an accessory that Tesla's going to make available with the Cybertruck. And if you combine that with the idea of a deployable solar system, then it becomes interesting because you can literally power, you stop for it. Let's say you're traveling around with the Cybertruck, you stop to camp for a few days somewhere. Well, you don't necessarily need to have a charging option at the campsite. You could deploy your solar, trickle charge your battery, and power whatever kitchen installation you have out of the truck. That could be very cool. It's a cool idea. I think it's going to appeal to a lot of people. The sense of liberty of being able to just go somewhere and power your old trip with your own electricity produced by your own truck. It's very interesting, I think. It's going to appeal to a lot of people. Also on the Cybertruck, we posted earlier this morning or last night, depending on the people. We're all on different time zones, but the ATV, the now known as the Cyber Quad, the Tesla Cyber Quad that was unveiled at the same time as the pickup truck, Elon confirmed that it's going to be available. They're gonna release it, and he said that it's going to be an option actually on the Cybertruck. I assume at least as first. So that's something that I suggested actually on my post about it, because I thought it would make sense to combine the products, especially since I doubt that Tesla is going to go into like high volume production of this ATV, or at least at first. But we don't have any specs or anything like that, any pricing information on that ATV. So take everything with a grain of salt. But it looked cool to me. The ATV looked cool. Elon did confirm it's going to be a two-person ATV. He added that information. It's going to be a two-seater. So yeah, it's more like a toy than anything else. It's not an ATV for yard work or anything like that. It's more like it's going to be a fun ride, I think, more than anything else. And
yeah, it looks like it's rear-wheel drive from the pictures. there's no like chain to the front wheel and there's a chain to the back wheel. What's maybe exciting, and we can have Micah and Mikey look at it, but it looks like it's kind of got electric motorcycle or moped type of components on it. I see the chain in the back. So maybe that segues into Tesla developing some other smaller products.
Perhaps. Yeah, Elon was really not on board with that idea. He said last shareholder meeting he doesn't want to produce, especially motorcycles, which he sees as more dangerous. But an ATV is a four-wheeler, so a lot safer. So that makes more sense for Tesla, I think.
And he did say he wanted to do electric bikes, or he would be open to the idea of electric bikes.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah, bicycle, yeah.
So, you know, depending on your view of what's a bike and what's a motorcycle, and those lines have been kind of blurred lately, you know, that could be a step in this direction.
Yeah, I mean, almost every automaker now is doing their own electric bicycle, it seems like. But it's all about just like putting your name, your brand on some bike, really. They really seems to have much to do with the actual components and anything like that, because of course Tesla is not producing like a electric bike motor. Like they're used to producing like 100 plus kilowatt motors, and for a bike you want this like a 750 watt motor or maybe like a 1 kilowatt motor would be very powerful for an electric bike. So 100-fold difference is a major difference. But yeah, it's still a possibility in my opinion, but far-fetched a little bit. All right. Moving on to other Tesla news this week. One interesting one I thought was the confirmation that Tesla is going to offer what they call an all-weather protection kit for the Model 3 for free for existing owners and new owners that with new car deliveries. The kit basically consists of two mud flaps, and Tesla confirmed it's to protect against the paint against excessive wear. So it's a problem we started to see after the last winter, and some Tesla owners in areas where they use sand on the road, where they use granite or salt because of the snow to get the better road conditions. There's been some unusual paint degradation behind the wheels, which means like the wheels just blow up some sand or whatnot, some little rocks, and the wear is a little bit faster. To be fair, that happens with most cars in those regions. It's just that it doesn't happen that fast. And Tesla, with the first winter for a lot of people, it was quite big. I didn't experience anything major on mine, even though it spent the whole winter in Quebec, where it's basically as hard of a winter you can get. But it did start a little bit, like I've seen some start of it. So I'm starting to get worried about it. And I was considering, adding some XL protection film on the bottom. I thought that might be enough to just, because it was kind of minors, but other people, I saw them having way bigger issues. So they were looking at actually at aftermarket mud flaps for the Model 3s. And there's a little market, a third party market that, sprung out of this issues, and a bunch of people started offering the product. But now Tesla is going to offer its own for free, so that appease those owners that were worried about those paint issues. Funny enough, they said that they're gonna send that memo to Canadian service centers and Tesla stores. That their staff know. They said it's going to be available for all Canadian owners, except for BC. Which is kind of weird. I mean, to be fair, they do have a more temperate climate than the rest of Canada.
Yeah, but not that temperate.
Yeah, they still have a winter. They still have some snow. But also, when I got the memo, I asked Tesla directly, like, is there going to be other markets with? Because the Northeast and the U.S. also has some decent snow, and they do also use salt on the road and sand. They do that in New York, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I figure like maybe they should offer that to New Yorker Tesla owners too. Tesla didn't get back to us on that. So, all right. I see some question about it in the room, and I guess we should address it too. The market reaction to the Tesla Cybertruck. Were you surprised? I mean, the stock, last I checked, was down 6% now in the day. Following the event from last night?
I am not surprised. Mm-hmm. I knew it the second I looked at it that the market was going to drop a lot. And we kind of knew, like everybody said, it was going to be polarizing. Elon noted that quite a bit. It was at least as polarizing as I thought it was going to be, and probably a lot more. The normal people in my Facebook feed all think it looks ugly. From certain angles, I think it looks good. Other angles, it kind of just looks like a tent or something. I don't know. I think I'm just going to give it some time to get used to it. I feel like this is one of those things that you're not going to like on day one, just automatically love. This is going to take time. And, you know, the design actually does have a lot of functional, merits to it. You know, the back slope, there was plenty of headroom in the back. So that downslope there doesn't seem to bother me. And if you look at just the specs, they're pretty compelling, especially compared to what Rivian's got.
Or any gas-powered truck, too.
Oh, yeah. And gas-powered trucks, it's not even close. Yeah. But, you know, just on a purely electric basis, Rivian was kind of like our benchmark. Mm-hmm. And I think in just about every way, it's more compelling. Now, that is with a very polarizing look. So, my understanding is a lot of people put money down, but it's only $100 at this point.
Yeah. And that's why I find interesting, like David Glotfelty, I think, just mentioned in the comments on YouTube that, wait until they do reveal those reservation numbers. And I felt like that's what was Tesla's plan here. They would do something like, all right, yeah, it is a polarizing design, but look at the reservation numbers we just got, and we got X number of, I wouldn't be surprised if they got over 100,000 reservation on this. And I thought they were going to do that, and putting the deposit price at just $100 was part of that plan to facilitate having a higher number to show off.
I agree.
So they didn't do it yet. Hasn't been.
I think within 24 hours, Elon will post a number.
Exactly.
Say so 2022 deliveries are already gone, are almost gone, or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So yeah, I think he's going to do that around the 24 hour mark. That would make sense to me. And I think the market is missing the bigger point here. The specs clearly points toward a big cost improvement in both battery and manufacturing of electric vehicles, period. I mean, we just discussed the battery pack of the base version. Base version costs $40,000, and we estimate that it has a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack in it. Right now, the cheapest cars that Tesla sells with a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack is $80,000. That's the Model S. And now Tesla is selling one with the same energy capacity for half the price. So what's the other difference in the battery pack? Is just the pickup truck is just so much cheaper to manufacture than a Model S? Maybe, but like
doesn't look like
half
it.
As expensive. I doubt it. So I think there's a battery improvement, but also a manufacturing improvement with the new exoskeleton body frame structure. I'm sure that having to work around the body in the frame at the same time as a big improvement. So there's no stamping, there's no paint really, because you're on stainless. Yeah, I researched that today, like make sure that they can do different colors at least, so that not they don't make 200,000 trucks a year and they are all the same color. There's ways to do it, but it's complicated and more expensive.
It might be a trim package, like the wheel wells could be, you know, red or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, there's ways around that, but like, I don't think you can really do stainless steel. I mean, one of the nice things about stainless steel is if you get a scuff, you can just kind of sand it out, mm-hmm. or buff it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't do that if you put paint on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think paint, like, you know, Apple has the stainless steel Apple Watch, and those things, like, you know, they get scuffed up pretty easily, and they can't really do much about it. I think actually you probably can, but I don't think there's a lot of color options with stainless steel.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the market is missing the point here, and I don't understand the big fall. I mean, there's always the phenomenon of buy the rumor and sell the news, but I think there was much bigger news with the cost thing that was a surprise. Like, that wasn't rumored at all. That was just a shock to everyone. Some people have been saying that the whole window thing, that's why the market is falling. Like, Tesla looks stupid with the window thing. I mean, they just wiped out over $1 billion in market cap. Is it really because the window breaked on when the guy threw a metal ball to the window? And the ball didn't even go through the window. Any type, like, do that on any pickup truck on the market right now, and that window will shatter, and that ball will be inside the cabin for sure. That thing didn't go through. It just broke. I mean, that's a win in my book. It's just, actually, if I was Tesla, like Elon Musk and friends, I mean, friends didn't say anything at first. So it's Elon that was like, whoop, what the hell happened there? But if he would have played it off, like, yeah, that's what we wanted to happen. Look, it's like a bullet just hit it, but it didn't went through. Like, I think most people would have just went with it. But he was honest about it. It was like, oh, that wasn't supposed to happen. So, I mean, good on him. But it was still an impressive thing. I don't know. That can't be it. I mean, I see not only shorts mentioning that. I see, like, just regular people saying that's why the stock dropped. But
if it is, it could be. Like, that might, it shows that, you know, Elon's not perfect, mm-hmm. and all this other stuff and whatever. But if that's the case, then it's going to bounce back really quickly, because people are going to forget about the ball thing pretty quickly, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. Before they mentioned it, I already forgot about it. I mean,
right.
It did look stupid for the rest of the show because they mentioned it. But if they wouldn't have mentioned it, it would have went smoothly. But yeah, I think there's a lot of, I think the truck is going to be a success. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a success. And that old, like, I'm not a stock analyst or anything like that. And full disclosure, I own Tesla stocks. And don't take my recommendation for granted. Just do your own research. But the way I see it, that drop in price is going to be wiped out pretty quick after they announce the reservation numbers, which I think are going to be very good, in the six figures. Whether it's low six figures or higher six figures, I'm not sure. But they're going to be very big. Why? First of all, look, our articles on it are extremely popular. I look at the Google search terms. Tesla trucks skyrocketed past Model Y, past Model 3, past all of that. It's the event appeared to be bigger than any other event Tesla has done in the past. And the coverage is everywhere. The breaking of the glass, actually, of the windows might actually have helped, because that also brought a lot of more eyes to the event, because a lot of people were making memes and whatnot. And I doubt that would have stopped someone who was going to buy it to not reserve it. But for people that wasn't aware of it and now they're aware of it, then it gives you an opportunity to actually get another reservation. So I think the number is going to surprise a lot. Do you have a guess on the numbers?
I don't know. I'll say 100,000 by today.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's over 200,000 for the first day.
That would be interesting, yeah. Especially with $100. You know, if it was $1,000 or even $500, mm-hmm. that would be more of a commitment. But $100 for a lot of people is easy to put out there.
Yeah, and what make it easier too with $100 is that, like I've seen with my last few reservations on Tesla vehicles. Reservation don't mean a lot with Tesla anymore. That became clear. Like, I was first day reservation holder for my Model 3 and ended up getting it a year, like a year after the vehicle launched, because it's not the same time in Canada. And then the configuration I wanted wasn't available yet and everything. And it's going to be the same thing with the Tesla truck, because I mean, right now I really want that tri-motor version. It looks like it's not going to be the first version available and whatever. So, and plenty of other people in a similar situation. So normally I wouldn't really have reserved it. I would just have waited for it to be available and see if I really wanted it at that point. But now it was just $100 instead. So I'm not putting aside $1,000 for 2 years or something like that. It's just $100. It's not, doesn't affect my budget that much. I'm like, all right, I'll put the reservation in that. And I did. Did you?
I actually haven't. And yeah, Here's why. One, I don't think I'm a truck person, like not a pickup truck person. If it was the exact same configuration, but it had like a bed in it, maybe I would, but I'm getting a Model Y. I already have a Model Y reservation. So I don't know. I mean, and I did reserve a Mustang earlier this week. So
That's right.
I think I've used my stuff out. And actually, the third and probably the biggest reason is that Tesla is not great about holding, like, giving people the reservation in order. Mm-hmm. I think we saw with the Model 3. Like, maybe the first, I don't know, 2 months they were kind of going in order. Then after that, it was just a free for all, and like people who had reservations for, you know, 2 or 3 years were not getting theirs, and people who just ordered like a week ago were getting them.
Yeah.
So I don't put too much faith in Tesla's adherence to their order list. I think they just kind of send cars everywhere and try to fill the order, you know, the line in which people signed up. But I don't think they, if you want a truck, you can get a truck, I think, you know, at the time that they're selling them.
So for the Mach-E, are you serious about getting it? You really want the...
Yeah, I just think it's good to have a non-Tesla vehicle. And we're getting rid of our Bolt, so Chevy Bolt. So this is like the best non-Tesla electric car, I think, on the market right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not on the market right now, but it's only a year out. And I don't know. It's a nice car.
Is there anything else you want to add that you couldn't do in the last podcast because you were still under embargo?
Even though I don't know. I feel like we hinted enough at it.
But you did get a test ride in it.
Yeah, the ride was great. It wasn't like off the line acceleration like a Tesla or even some other vehicles. And this wasn't the GT version either.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they put us in the performance one, which has all-wheel drive, but the front motor is only 50 kilowatts, so it's not super fast. We did a slalom the same place that we did Tesla vehicle testing, and it felt really good. It was the kind of thing where the driver was going so sharp left and right that people were like falling over, like in the car, but the car itself was doing fine. It wasn't, you know, rolling over or anything like that. It was pretty smooth. And the interior is nice. Their center console screen is really nice. I don't know if I'm going to use that volume rocker thing or not, that's knob or whatever they have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how well that would work, but you know, I do enjoy CarPlay and Android Auto on the Chevy Bolt, so that'll be nice to continue to use. Yeah, I don't know. It's a nice vehicle. I mean, it's going to be kind of weird because we're theoretically in a year going to have a Model Y and a Mustang Mach-E, which I guess will be good for testing. Like,
yeah,
which one do we like more?
Yeah, exactly. You're going to be able to do some real world comparison tests.
Right.
All right. Staying with the pickup trucks, though, it looked like because of the Tesla events, a lot of other companies that wanted to ride that hype a little bit. And there was a bunch of other announcements that came out the same day, really, that Tesla unveiled a truck earlier in the day, including, first off, GM, Mary Barra confirmed that they will bring to market their first electric pickup truck in late 2021.
Now, did they mean fully electric or just, you know, with a electric hybrid?
Well, she did say electric, but I mean, if she means hybrid at this point and doesn't specify it, I mean, she has to be ridiculed or something.
Right.
This is it's almost 2020 now. You cannot call the hybrid car electric at this point. It's all electric or nothing.
I mean, usually they have some shame and they just say electrified. But we know that the leadership of GM hasn't been shameless.
Yeah.
So,
but then they also know that everyone else is coming up with their own electric pickup truck. They have to do the same. So she said that she didn't reveal anything else about the truck, but late 2021, that's also when the first version of the Tesla Cybertruck is supposed to come. And then you add Lawrence Storm Motors, which, speaking of GM, they just bought GM's Lordstown Motor, the factory in Lawrencetown, Ohio.
Ohio.
Yeah. That's where the factory is. But GM was decommissioning it after not allocating any of the vehicles produced there, which are escaping my mind right now. But they had two vehicles and they stopped producing them there. Sold the plant to Lordstown Motors, which really a brand new company that is sort of a spinoff of Workhorse, which we've been reporting on Workhorse for a long time. They had a few electric vehicles, an all-electric van, and then a pickup truck plug-in hybrid, but with a significant range. Like, I think it's 60 kilowatt-hour battery pack in it, so it still had like a decent all-electric range, but it was a plug-in hybrid. So it was never clear what's the exact link between Workhorse and Lordstown Motors, but it looks like the founder and CEO of Workhorse left Workhorse, started Lordstown Motor, and said that they're going to use Workhorse technology to build their truck, their pickup truck. So we assume that actually the pickup truck's probably going to be plug-in hybrid. It's just going to be a version of the Workhorse truck. Actually not. The same yesterday, as Tesla was preparing to unveil their truck, they claim that they're going to beat Tesla to market with their own truck, which is now called the Lordstown Endurance electric pickup truck. And it's going to be all electric. It's going to start at $52,000 before tax incentive. Decent enough price. Going to be available at the beginning of Q4 2020. Ooh. Talking again about a company that didn't exist last year, a company that doesn't seem to have a working prototype of that truck, and that just acquired the plant earlier this month. So less than a year, really, they want that to be in production. So
yeah, it's very optimistic.
Allow me to be skeptical on that claim.
Also, you know, I find it interesting that they chose Lordstown to be the name of the company.
Yeah, that's not...
I mean, Lordstown is kind of a, like, I hate to say it, but it's like a very blue collar. Well, I mean, that's not bad for pickups, but
still,
you know, it was kind of down in the dumps because of the plant closing. There was like a ton of specials on like the news programs about how like everybody's leaving the town, and it just seemed kind of depressing. And to pick that up seemed kind of like a risky move. Or maybe not well thought out.
But even regardless of the connotation with the association,
right, Lordstown,
just as a brand name, like Lordstown Motor, and then it's called the Lordstown Endurance. Like, doesn't sound like a truck. It sounds like a rally for the town of Lordstown. Like, right. It sounds like a protest or something. Anyway. They released a bunch of renders of the truck. Looks good, actually. Looks very good. I have to say, like, I like the renders, but that's what they are, renders. So I'm very skeptical about the whole thing. They didn't say much about the truck itself. The only really tidbits of information they released as interesting was the four-wheel drive with hub motor system. So, but that's ambitious, using hub motors in a commercial electric vehicle, like a consumer available electric vehicle, never been done before, really, in a production product. So,
yeah, I mean, they have third-party upgrade kits that are hub motors, but this coming right out of the bat with hub motors is pretty interesting.
Yeah, so like, it's very ambitious thing to do, and then they want to do it in a year. I just don't believe it. Sorry, I don't think it's going to happen. I think they were just trying to ride the Tesla hype and get some publicity out of it, and they did. I mean, I posted it, and the post was really popular, and people liked the design too, and everything. But yeah, I think most people agree that with my skepticism on it. And 52,000, I thought maybe they were like, oh, I think we're going to be competitive with Tesla with 52,000 before incentive too, because Tesla doesn't have the incentive anymore. So with the 7,500, we're going to beat them. And then Tesla is like, nope, $40,000 before incentive. Like, all right, deal with it.
Yeah.
All right, we have a few other things to get to, but really quickly, I wanted to mention two more Tesla things that I skipped over just now in the post. The Gemini, that's how you say it, all right? Gemini wheels. Okay. We talked about those wheels before because Tesla made them available in China for the multi-performance, but only in China for some reason. Now they're available in other markets, including the US, Tesla launched them. They are now called the Gemini wheels, and they're sort of a more aerodynamic wheels than the performance one, but 19-inch, and they don't have a wheel cover. They're just like more closed than sports wheel. The interesting thing is that they are launching it in the US, but only with a winter package. So that means that you get the 19-inch wheels, but only with winter tires on them, the winter tires or the Pirelli Soto Zero tires. And they're only working for multi-performance that are configured with 20-inch wheels, which I don't think is exactly right. I think you could install them on other car, on other Model 3s, but Tesla says that. And sometimes they make it so you cannot order it if you don't, like, enter the VIN of your car in it. So I'm not sure what they're doing here. But what they're doing really is, like, they are creating an incentive to buy this winter package from them. And I have to say it's kind of interesting because Tesla, they don't sell only the winter tires. You cannot just buy winter tires for your Model 3s from Tesla. They always sell them as a package with wheels. And, of course, that's way more expensive than just buying tires that match your current wheels and just changing them for the winter. But there's some advantages here, especially if you're coming from a 20-inch configuration down to a 19-inch. It's not that much expensive because if you're going with 20-inch winter tires, they're more expensive. When you go over 19-inch, the price goes up pretty quick if you want quality tires too, like the Pirelli Soto Zero. Also, going with a smaller wheel, better efficiency. And since during the winter, you get an efficiency loss like any car, then at least it compensates with having the smaller wheels. And then on top of it, the new wheel seems more aerodynamic. So the smaller wheels plus the fact that it's more aerodynamic, maybe the efficiency gain is going to be quite significant for the winter. Maybe, well, it's still not a gain. It's going to be a loss, but the loss is going to be less significant. That's what I should say. And the last advantage really is that you don't have to change the tire on your wheels, and that can cause, especially if it's not done well, it can cause excessive wear on the tires if they get on and off your wheels. Like, you have to take it off twice a year, so sometimes it accelerates the wear on your tire, I should say. Do you like the design of it?
Yeah, I don't know, it's good to have options. I don't think I would pick it myself, but what about you?
I don't prefer the look to them over the sports wheel, like the 20 inch I have right now on my Model 3. But I was considering the Aero wheels for my winter my winter setup, but I didn't like the design that much. And then Tesla just said, you cannot put 18 inch wheels on your Model 3 Performance. That doesn't work. Like Tesla, I'm like, what? It should work. And now that was like last year, not, before they were actually selling it standard. Now the Model 3 Performance with 18 inch wheels. And so clearly they were lying to me. But
or maybe, yeah, maybe they just hadn't gotten around to checking to see how it worked.
Yeah, well, I checked with a lot of people at Tesla because I was like, that doesn't make sense. But anyway, this I would have probably pulled the trigger on that and get those instead of just sticking with my 20 inch wheels. I would have done that. $3,500 though, still not cheap.
Yeah.
Last thing I want to mention about Tesla. The Arnsdale project in Australia that's been dubbed the largest battery system in the world that Tesla put online 2 years ago now is getting a massive expansion, 50% expansion, another 64.5 megawatt hour of power packs being added to the system. Neoen, the company that operates their Arnsdale battery system, confirmed it and confirmed that Tesla is making the additions with their batteries. So it's going to get even bigger. And of course, that's at least partly the project that started the whole energy storage craze, because it's proven extremely successful. They confirm also this week that it saved consumers more than $50 million Australian dollars in the 2 years of operation. That's pretty good considering it cost only $66 million to build a project.
Yeah, it's paying for itself like almost immediately.
Yeah. Pretty quickly, yeah. And I'm sure that the 50 megawatt addition is going to be cheaper too than it was 2 years ago to do it, because Tesla has been improving fast its battery cost. So I'm sure there's a difference there. All right. Where are we at?
So we talked a little bit about the Mustang, but, you know, kind of my big takeaway from the Mustang Mach-E was that it did copy a lot of things from Tesla. And, you know, Ford didn't mention Tesla in its presentations very much. But surprising. The fact that we were having... What's that?
Surprising.
Yeah, I mean, they would always say, like, you know, the competition or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was clearly, you know, they were obvious who they were talking about. Mm-hmm. But... When you look at the venue that they have the event in, the size and shape of the vehicle, and a lot of the decisions they made, it's clear that Tesla was kind of the impetus for a lot of these decisions. So just running down quickly.
The Charger. Don't forget the Charger.
I mean, the Charger is so bad.
This one is the craziest one.
Yeah. But let's start at the top. Like, the event was at Tesla's stomping grounds. Like, I know it's Los Angeles that they wanted to unveil the event at. Some people said, well, there's not that many places in LA. I mean,
have you been to LA?
Yeah, it's hard to find a place to, you know, drive a car around. But the fact that we drove the car literally around Tesla's the design studio, and then right by their design studio, it's just like too much of a coincidence to, I mean, we could have gone to the Van Nuys airport. We could have gone, you know, a couple other places that just off the top of my head would have made sense. And we didn't do any like hardcore riding. I mean, it was just, you know, like a 0 to 60 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe it was a coincidence, but it didn't seem like it at all. But also the design of the car, like
the interior specifically. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you put the big display there. In the center, the very minimalistic venting system and dashboard. You know, they did add a dial to the screen, but it, you know, it's a portrait screen like the Model X and S. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of like a hybrid of the Model X and S and the Model 3. They do have a second display behind the steering wheel with like speedometer and stuff, which I think is nice. Although, you know, that being said, I don't really miss it on the Model 3. Mm-hmm. Even the cup holders and the, you know, they had a wide storage area below. It just seemed like it felt like I was sitting in a weird version of a Model 3 when I was sitting in there. Although, you know, you're up much higher, which is probably going to be very similar to the Model Y. You know, it just kind of went across, like all the interior was very similar. And, you know, they're doing software updates like Tesla will, and it's not just going to be the center stack, but they're theoretically also going to be able to improve the efficiency of the batteries or the speed of the motor and do those things that Tesla does every once in a while. And of course, you know, the exterior is a crossover type of vehicle. They're calling it an SUV. Okay, whatever. And, you know, of course, the frunk, they called it a frunk. Obviously, I don't know if Tesla invented that or not, but
I think some other automakers are also starting to use that. I mean, I think they started it and now it's just become like part of the vernacular.
They certainly popularized it. Yeah. And, you know, the Mustangs looks very similar to Tesla's. Actually, Ford did some cool stuff by making a drain at the bottom of it and making the area waterproof. So like if you're in the mud or you want, you know, if you have something stinky like pizzas or something and you want to put that in the front, you don't have to smell it in the middle, or you can just fill it up with ice. Ford said, like, if you put the hood down, ice will stay in there for 3 or 4 days. So you can keep like,
with the sun beating on the hood.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe there's no sun in Detroit or something. I don't know. Wherever they tested it, they said they had a few days of ice in there with the thing closed. And then the obvious and probably most horrible example is the charging stations that they put out, which, like, very cringy. Like, it felt like this was done in a week by a high school art team or something.
Yeah, because it's a bad version of a supercharger, right? And I mean, I
report it's a level two. It's a level two charger. It's not even a supercharger.
That too, but I mean the design itself too. I mean, I reported on it when we saw the Lincoln one, and for the Lincoln, which of course, if you don't know, Lincoln is owned by Ford, and Lincoln had actually the excuse of at least the cutout inside of it was the shape of the Lincoln logo, but then at the event there was one by Ford, and they didn't have that because of course the Ford logo is not the Lincoln logo.
Yeah, and the materials were just really bad. Like, I can't tell you how, like, just disappointing it was, especially with the level two. And then that kind of goes to the next area where, like, Ford is copying these things, but they need to copy these other things as well. So Ford is touting the biggest charging network of any automaker, which is a, you know, a bald-faced lie. Mm-hmm. Like, they're basically, they've got deals running with Electrify America and EVgo and all the other ones, but that they're including level two charging, which is pointless on the road. You know, unless you want to spend 6 hours at a rest stop
on the road overnight, it's useful, but not for
overnight destinations. Even like, you know, if you want to spend 3 or 4 hours at a mall, maybe you get 100 miles of range, something like that's like the very best case scenario for quicker charging. Mm-hmm. But realistically, everybody really just wants fast chargers, and Electrify America and EVgo combined aren't and Green Lots and ChargePoint aren't anywhere near where Tesla supercharger stations are. In addition to that, it's obviously a lot easier to charge on Tesla supercharger network than it is with Ford. And the people I talked to there just really didn't seem to like either they didn't want to understand or they just had no idea what they were talking about. They seemed to think level two chargers were sufficient.
Blows, you know, my mind.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, you know, none of them have ever used an electric car. Like, they just don't know what it's like.
Tesla got it right there. Like, they got it so right. If there's some place you have to copy Tesla there, it's exactly on the charging, the whole idea behind charging. Because it makes so much sense. Supercharger allowing long distance travel, destination charger, level two once you arrive at your destination. Even the whole vocabulary around it, Tesla got it right. Once you arrive at the destination, then you can have a level two. You go overnight or you go for a long period of time. And then they even got the, though I think the deployment is not quite there yet, but the whole urban supercharger too. I think that's also a big and an important part of the strategy for people that cannot charge at home. You have those urban superchargers where you can just plug in and once a week or twice a week or whatever and be done quickly. The whole strategy is not perfectly executed yet. But the strategy is makes sense, is almost perfect. Copy it. Just copy it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, since Ford does have a dealer network and these dealers theoretically are going to be selling the Mach-E, like, why not just say, all right, every dealer in Ford's lineup has to install a couple, like, real fast chargers, not like, you know, they have these 25 kilowatt ones that are, you know, they're kind of in between level one and, or level two and level three. I mean, they're DC, but they're slower DC. I just don't think that's good enough. Like, I mean,
they're not well positioned often, the dealership.
So that builds, that does a couple things. One, it allows Ford to quickly charge its vehicles on the lot. Two, it allows Ford customers and theoretically other electric vehicles to come by and charge when they need to. And, you know, while they're charging, Ford can show them their electric vehicles or their other vehicles, and, you know, they have a captive audience. But probably the most important thing, and of course something that they haven't even hasn't even crossed Ford's mind, is when somebody's looking at a Mach-E and they want to say, well, how do I charge this if I'm going wherever? They can literally pull the thing up to the fast charger and say, hey, this is how it works, and put it in, and then they can watch the mileage going up. And a customer, for a customer to see that, it would be fantastic. I mean, they should do that at Tesla dealers. I think it would be incredible.
Well, they do have supercharger often.
At some of them. Yeah. And, you know, the people there are pretty helpful about that. But, you know,
but for the actual usability, though, do you think that sometimes the dealerships are not well located to really allow those long distance driving? And you want to be in a popular route between two metropolitan centers and well located in the highways. That's often not where dealerships are located.
That's true. I don't know. It's just the best that they can do right now. Like, yeah. I think it's an easy.
It's the
easy
minimum fix. They can do. I feel like. Right. All places that sell cars should have electric station. That just makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't think it's why it's even a discussion between those large automakers. Like, just want to keep selling your cars, just install this. That's it.
Right.
Crazy.
And so, good segue there. There was a survey that found that customers or people surveyed found that about an even split preferred the Mustang Mach-E to the Tesla Model Y.
51-49, so barely more, yeah. 51%-49%.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Mach-E, you know, the looks of it, I think the styling is good. Obviously, the Mustang purists, you know, with quotation marks, they're not fans of it, but I think overall, people really liked it. And, you know, a lot of people are comfortable and familiar with Ford. Tesla's a little bit more out there. Elon does some weird things that throws off some people. So, doesn't surprise me to see the 50-50 split. And frankly, either choice is a good one in my book.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I agree.
I mean, we're going to be split right down the middle at our house in a year or so.
All right, moving on quickly to the other stuff, because we've been going on for an hour here and I'm falling asleep.
Yes.
Nikola Motor, we haven't heard of them a lot lately, and I was fine with it, to be honest. They came out this week with some major bold claims about a battery breakthrough that's coming up. And of course, we know them more as a hydrogen fuel cell company, but they do have electric version of their trucks that they kind of were forced to make after the Tesla Semi was announced and everything. Even though they sort of took some shot at Tesla, Tesla Semi, and eventually even sued Tesla for the design of the Tesla Semi, which I still maintain today that it's a patent trolling lawsuit more than anything else. So now Nikola is out saying that they acquired a company that they cannot disclose the name of yet. And part of the acquisition includes a battery, which they already tested. They said they have the prototype for it. They tested it and everything. And they claimed that it has 3 times the energy density of current top-of-the-line lithium-ion battery cells. That's up to 500 watt-hours per kilogram on the production cell level, they say. And it cycled 2,000 times with acceptable end-of-life performance, 40% reduction in weight, 50% material cost reduction per kilowatt-hour. So massive claim one after the other. Biggest one really is that they say it doesn't use any of the expensive metals like cobalt and lithium, really. It says, did they say lithium? I'm not sure they said lithium. But cobalt at least.
Nickel maybe?
Maybe nickel, yeah. And they claim all that stuff, but they say they cannot show us the prototype yet. They're going to show it in the fall of 2020.
Well, I guess we'll wait till fall of 2020. Yep. I don't think, it is we get a crazy battery story almost every day, mm-hmm. at least a couple a week. This just kind of falls into that category. Like, if it's so great, build it mm-hmm. and put it in your vehicle and sell millions of them.
Yeah. But I'd stay skeptical until then because I had my up and downs with Nikola. Like, at first I was like, didn't trust them at all because they went with the whole thing like, oh, we have those battery trucks. And then like they came out with a press release and like all the media got it wrong. It was like, it's a battery electric vehicle. And like, no, it's a plug-in hybrid with natural gas range extender basically. And then they gave up the natural gas and then, oh, we are hydrogen fuel cell extender, et cetera. And then I would basically a hydrogen truck with a battery backup instead. So I'm like, okay. And then they had this whole plan of making like hundreds of hydrogen stations. And of course, our stance of hydrogen fuel cells has been clear for a while now. But so we started getting skeptical about it. But then they invited me to test out their UTV, their all-electric UTV. And that was impressive. I was like, all right, do you guys have something going on there that makes sense? Because that UTV was a ton of fun. Extremely fast, 100 kilowatt hour battery pack in this small thing. It was a ton of fun. It did break while we were testing it, but I mean, it was a suspension that broke. And to be fair, we were like going up and down giant rocks and everything. So, and it was a prototype, but I was like, all right, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they have some good thing going on there. But then they did the whole Tesla semi lawsuit, which was complete nonsense. And since then, I've been very skeptical of the company. But they've been raising hundreds of millions of dollars. They're now worth $3 billion. $3 billion for what I think is going to amount to nothing. Because that giant plan for hydrogen stations all over the world, with the battery electric trucks that are coming, people are going to realize that the efficiency of that is just nil compared to a battery electric truck. So, yeah, but then, like, if they have that thing and that thing works, then they should make all electric trucks with that thing and forget their fuel cells things. They need $1 billion just to build those hydrogen station. Build a $1 billion battery factory with those incredible battery cells there that doesn't require expensive and precious metals. And then you have a giant business. But, of course, that's if it's actually real, which, again, I doubt. Bad news for the Taycan. They announced a production delay. That's something I don't know if you can explain it to me. If someone can, I would really like that. It's been a thing with German automakers. Like we've seen it with Volkswagen. We've seen it now with the Taycan. And I think we saw it also with the Mercedes and the EQC. They announced the start of production, but then they don't do delivery for months later. Like, if you're producing the car, right, because there's been trial production before that. When you announce production, it's official production. You have car rolling out the line. That's how I understand it. But then you don't start deliveries until later. Like September, November was the start of VW ID3 production. They won't start deliveries until summer of 2020. Taken started production in September also. Deliveries were supposed to happen in January. Don't know what happens in those 3 months. But now they just reported that actually it's going to be a 8 to 10 weeks delay on top of that. So we don't expect any deliveries until March. So they started production.
You're getting pretty close to where Tesla's going to release its Plaid stuff.
Good point. I mean, March and summer 2020, there's still like a few months, but you're right. It's getting pretty close. So if I was Tesla, I'd crank that up a little bit, put some pressure on Porsche, try to convince a few of the 20,000+ Porsche reservation holder. So yeah, they didn't explain why. They just said that it's complicated to build and everything, and we have a delay. But they say that they've been producing it since September. So
yeah, I don't know.
Beats me.
I mean, maybe they have to validate stuff a little bit more, or maybe it's like Porsche has probably the worst press team I've ever seen in my life. But maybe it's like their press with their embargoes, and they're like, they give everybody, you know, they make a bunch of them and then they release them all at once instead of one comes off the assembly line, it goes to Dusseldorf. Another one comes off the assembly line, goes to Berlin.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Of course, that's not efficient. You want to pack a few of them together, but they said they started production in September.
Right.
I mean, I should be making more than one per day. They were planning a capacity of 20,000 a year. So right now, they should have a few thousand made at least. So I don't know. Well, Audi did the same thing too with the e-tron, and then they ended up having some problem with the battery pack, and they ended up recalling a bunch of them. So maybe they are being more cautious about it, and they figure out some problem, and now that's why they're delaying. But I don't know. Speaking of Audi, at the LA Auto Show, they unveiled the Sportback version of the e-tron,
which is a lot like the e-tron, except the back is slanted down a little bit.
It's a coupe.
And what's that?
It's a coupe, really. It's a coupe
version. And what's really unfortunate about the Sportback is that it has some cool features that, this is also kind of applies to the SUV, that it doesn't really, that can't release in the US because of regulations. And, you know, obviously we saw those cool rear view mirror cameras, that are on the German versions, but in the US, there's regular rear view mirrors. And another thing they showed us this time around is the, lights, and they actually have a projector in the lights.
Yeah. The matrix LEDs.
Yeah. So what it does is it, when you start up the car, turn off the car, whatever, it does this cool animation, which, you know, it's kind of neat, but there's actually a functional component to it where it tells you, like, it'll shine in the lane exactly in front of you on the highway, exactly where you are, so that, you know, if you're swerving to the left a little bit or swerving to the right a little bit or close to the lines, it'll kind of tell you where you are in the lane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only a grayscale right now. It's not color or anything, but that, you know, they said that in coming iterations of it, they could make, you know, a red light or a green light or whatever. So it might even kind of take that a little bit further in upcoming versions of it. I thought it was amazingly cool, yeah. But unfortunately in the US, you're only allowed to have regular lights and brights, and anything in between is illegal.
Yeah.
So Audi can't use that here, which is really unfortunate because it's not only cool, but it's also a safety measure.
Yeah, the U.S. is very strict about those things like that. Like, since I've been in Paris, like, I've seen a bunch of those cars who have those cool flasher mm-hmm. indicator that goes progressively from one side to the other to tell you that where they're going. I think those look so cool. I mean, it's not that different from just a flashing, a blinking light, but you don't see that in the U.S. because it's illegal. It has to be a continuous line all the time instead of a progression of the line like that. For me, the first time I saw it here, I was like, oh, look at that. It's so cool. And everyone is like, of course. Like,
yeah.
So I look like an idiot, but I think it's cool.
And there's one other thing. So interestingly, same company, VW Group, probably the worst press core is Porsche, and probably the best press corps is Audi inside the same group. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, in terms of access and giving us the real real information rather than trying to spin everything. Mm-hmm. You know, our rep there is Matt. And one thing that they told us is that the battery, one of the reasons why the Sportback has a much higher, and when I say much, I mean
slightly like higher efficiency,
25 mile range improvement, is because Audi is now letting users use 91-ish% of the battery pack, whereas with the e-tron SUV, they were only allowed to hit 88%. And Audi has told us that they're still working on that with the battery management system and a bunch of other stuff. It could theoretically go higher, and a future update to old,
that's a big thing, you
know, older stuff might allow a bigger range in the Audi SUV, but they wouldn't commit to that. They're just kind of looking
why?
At that.
If they're doing on the new one, is that, if this the only difference, why they couldn't just over the eight update the older ones?
It's a hardware consideration. There is a new battery management controller, but it's something that they're
Not just software. It's not just they get more comfortable with letting people use more. There's a new hardware associated with it.
Right. And I mean, this is a great example of good PR versus crappy PR. Like, they told us exactly all these things.
Oh, yeah. Audi is really open up with that stuff. Yeah.
So, good job, Audi. Yeah. Boo, Porsche.
I mean, when
and we speaking of
when we reported on the e-tron, when I tested the e-tron and everything, I was like, yeah, I like the car, but like your efficiency sucks. And they were like, yeah, we know our efficiency sucks. But then they were like honest about it. They explained why their efficiency sucked. Like, we want to have a giant buffer for this reason and whatnot and everything. And of course, our car is heavier too, because we wanted more luxury inside and everything. So like, all right, it's a good reason. Like, you make concessions and everything. So
yeah. And, you know, I think Audis are priced a little bit higher than they should be, but I think with the deals going on right now with the e-tron, you can get it for, I don't know, 20,000 off. So it's competitively priced. And speaking of the VW group, Volkswagen rolled out their 2022 ID Space Vision. With its gazillionth EV concept. And we were at the Peterson Automotive Museum in Los Angeles to check it out. And Peterson is awesome. They had a electric motorcycle and bike show simultaneously happening, which if you're in the LA area, you should check out. The actual vehicle, the Vision vehicle itself, is cool. It's kind of like a four-door shooting brake type of station wagon, mm-hmm. sporty. It actually had two skateboards and helmets like embedded in the rear. And if you don't know that by now, you know, this is a concept, and none of this stuff that we're talking about will ever see the streets.
Well, they will have a version of it. That's why they called it 2022.
Right.
Because in 2022, they will have a wagon version, because they already unveiled a Vision one, which is a sedan, which is supposed mm-hmm. to come in 2021, I think. And then now they have a wagon version of it, which is basically the same thing, but
I loved it. I think it's like, I would love to throw the family in there and go on a long trip. I think it would be great. Mm-hmm. I'm just worried, as everybody else is, that, you know, this won't come when it's supposed to come. And, you know, 2022 is pretty far out. I mean, there's going to be Cybertrucks on the street at that point. So I don't know. And then, of course, they have the exact ripoff of the Tesla Model 3 display.
Mm-hmm. That's okay, though. I'm okay with people ripping off Tesla and what they do, right?
Yeah.
Rip off Tesla on the supercharger, please.
Do that. Yes, exactly.
Rip off the Tesla supercharger, because VW is Electrify America. And they've been good at deploying things fast out for America, but apparently there's a lot of issues with their stations are being reported. Hopefully they can get that nailed down, because in terms of deployment, they've been doing it fast.
Yeah, we talked to them at the LA Auto Show, and they're doing a lot of good work, Electrify America. So we're happy to hear about that.
Yeah, and they are aware of the issues with their charger, and they're addressing it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's good. That's good. All right. that's pretty much it for us this week. Thanks a lot for listening. Hopefully we weren't too low energy. I felt like I was because I woke up at 4 this morning and I've been working nonstop since 4 a.m. And I know Seth, you look pretty good for someone who's just been on a red eye, barely slept. But you've been having a fun week in California and everything.
Yeah, so it's been a great week.
That's probably energized you a little bit.
Yep.
All right. So hope you liked the show. Give us a thumbs up if you did. Subscribe. And we'll see you same place, same time next week. Ciao.